Hey there, True Crime Mamas. I'm your host, Susanna, and today we have a special episode with Lindsay and Amber. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Good. So Valentine's Day is approaching, right?
Rapidly.
I know we're all like old married ladies with little kids, but do either of you have like any kind of plans, or do you have any traditions that you do, you and your husbands?
No traditions here, no. I'm lucky if I get dinner or an acknowledgement that it's Valentine's Day, but it's okay. I mean, we'll probably do a date night, get a babysitter for the kids, and just have a little quality time to ourselves for a few hours.
That sounds so nice.
Yeah.
We're kind of the same. We kind of do, like, typically, like, a date night in because we have a million kids and everybody wants to watch our million kids. So it just makes it easier. Like, we might get takeout and watch a movie. I may have bought, like, some new, like, sexy lingerie.
Oh, yes.
But, yeah, we just kind of make it simple, easy, and then we run with it.
That sounds good.
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
I know, like, as a whole, everyone in the world has been, quote-unquote, staying in a lot, but I still prefer a, like, at-home date.
Yes.
Any day of the week.
Yes.
So.
And it's cheaper.
Oh, a gosh. Lot. Yeah, you save a ton of money by doing that.
All right, Amber and Lindsay. Well, let's go ahead and get started on your case. So you all are covering a case out of Winston-Salem, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it's very close to home for a lot of us here on the team. So the victim's name is Alice Gaither.
Yep.
All right, so let's get started.
30-year-old Allison Gaither had filed a 50B, better known as a restraining order, just 3 days prior to her death. She had stated in the protective order that her husband had called her at least 8 times that Tuesday, making threats to take their children. He called her names, and at 9 p.m. that night, he actually showed up because he was upset that one of her friends was there. He left after Allison refused to let him in, but he called her again 3 hours later and showed up at her bedroom window yelling and cussing at her. Then he tried to get into the children's bedroom.
Allison Gaither began working for the Winston-Salem Forsyth County School System in 2003. Initially, she had worked in alternative education in the administrative offices. She also worked at Winston-Salem Prep Academy for a couple of years, but ended up returning to accountability. Her work peers described her as very sweet, always friendly, and upbeat, and she was the sort of person who would always greet everyone. And I remember I heard from several sources that she was the nicest person, would give you the shirt off of her back. Corey, her husband at the time, worked as a cook at the Bonefish Grill in Winston-Salem. Together, Allison and Corey had 2 small children, ages 3 and 5, and Allison had an older child from a previous marriage. The two of them had been living apart from one another at separate addresses at this point in time. An anonymous source that knew Allison stated that every time she came in to get her hair done, which was not too terribly often, but Corey was always with her. So Allison was not able to talk, to really interact with anyone because he was always there. Mm-hmm. She also stated that when the kids were with them, Corey usually had a very short temper with them. She said that he would not let them have any, like, candy, like, for a treat, for being good, anything like that. And he was very, very short and mean with them when they would come in.
Oh, wow. So, Corey did have a history with the law. In 1998, he was actually convicted of possessing marijuana and trespassing and ordered to stay away from Kimberly Park. And he was actually also convicted of another misdemeanor, but it was an assault on a female. And that was in August of 2001. And then he had a misdemeanor as well for communicating threats in 2002. So it kind of seemed like he had this...
He had a pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah, he escalated and then had a pattern.
Exactly. And then Allison had also stated before passing, obviously way before that, you know, on... It's actually November 14th. And she said that Corey had used a key to get into the house and assault one of her male friends while the two of their children watched. And, I mean, she said he actually got so angry that he punched a hole in the wall. He broke down a bathroom door. He threw a laptop and stomped on the laptop.
That's so childish. You know?
It is. I mean, my 8-year-old has temper tantrums like that.
Right. Adults are not supposed to have ones like that.
Yeah. And then Allison also had stated, too, that he held her down and just, like, continuously kept yelling at her. And one of their neighbors, Robert Winfrey, he lived across the street, and he said he didn't really know the couple well, but that, you know, they were typically always your average friendly couple.
Right.
He said he was really unaware that there were any issues between them, but he did say that he had previously seen the police show up once at their residence and carry Corey out in handcuffs.
Yeah.
So he said he didn't know, you know, what it was for, but... It was something that he had seen before.
Right. On December 4th, 2009, at 5:30 a.m., Corey Dwayne Gaither went to his estranged wife's home with ill intentions. He allegedly hid in the bushes outside her house and waited until her ex-husband left from visiting. Her and her ex-husband remained friends after they split, and he was over visiting. And he entered the home and attacked her. Allison Gaither was seen by a neighbor on her front lawn trying to run from her ex-husband, but Corey told the neighbor he was going to kill her and himself and proceeded to drag Allison back into their home. The neighbor immediately ran to the phone and called police at 5:33 a.m. It is thought that she ran out of the house a second time in order to protect the kids from Corey and any harm that he might bring to them, so she was trying to run out to keep him with her instead of him turning on the children, I think is what she was trying to do. When police arrived, Allison was dead upon arrival with multiple stab wounds. She was completely naked, and she was stabbed with a single-edged kitchen knife by her estranged ex-husband, Corey Gaither. Investigators found a blood-spattered Kia Sedona at the house and a trail of blood that led from Allison's driveway to the street and then behind the next-door neighbor's house, where she collapsed and died, just a few feet away from a child's plastic playset.
That just plays like puts this really creepy
vibe.
Sad, like
it does. I can't imagine that having that happen in your backyard or right next to your house. That is absolutely horrible. Police issued a Be on the Lookout report for Corey's car, which was an older model Buick Century. At 7:14 a.m., three motorists called the Davidson County Sheriff's Office. Do you want to know why they called? I'm going to tell you. A man was hanging from a tree limb in someone's front yard. The tree was only about 40 feet from the main road, and it turns out this was Corey. Corey had tied an electrical extension cord around his neck, climbed the tree, and jumped. The branch was even low enough that he could have stood up if he wanted, so he could have saved himself, but he decided against it. There were no affiliations to the property where he chose to hang himself, and his vehicle was found parked not too far down the road from where he was found, so I'm guessing he was just driving along, freaking out about what he just did, and this oak tree looks fantastic, and...
He did it on display. Like, that was the weird thing, too. Like, he was like, hey, I want everybody to see me. Let me just choose this. I mean, and it's a popular road, too, in the area that it happened on.
Yeah.
So, he definitely wanted to be found, for sure.
Yeah, he definitely wanted everybody to see what he had done.
And there was a suicide note, or a note that he had left. We couldn't get access to that.
Yeah, we don't know what it said, but he did leave a note.
Yeah.
So...
So one of the really awesome outcomes about this case, and it's unfortunate that it, you know, happened this way, is, that House Bill 41 was brought into play.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it took a decade for this bill to pass, but after the tragic loss of Allison, it eventually became law, and they call it Allison's Law. Mm-hmm. And Allison's Law helps to track domestic violence perpetrators by trying to give the victims an early notice. So, and they use like an ankle bracelet, mm-hmm. kind of like a house arrest bracelet.
Like a tracking device. Yeah.
It's got a GPS on it. And it gives them early notice so that if they cross like this line, you know, they have time to get out and go to more of a safe zone.
Right.
So... Allison's mother, Deborah Holt, has she advocated for a full decade for this.
She worked so hard trying to get this thing.
She did.
She never gave up, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. And her mother actually said in a statement, "There have been numerous deaths since 2009 when Allison died, and I just can't help but think that some of those could have been prevented." Holt described her daughter, Allison, as funny, loving, caring, just a person who made a friend wherever she went. And she said when she died, it was devastating. Her family loved her husband, and they didn't understand why he'd kill her. When the two separated, she got a restraining order, but he came looking for her. "You cannot make sense of domestic violence. There's no way," said Holt. Her mother said, if my daughter Allison had just had 2 or 3 minutes notice, she would have grabbed her children and left immediately. There's no doubt in my mind to that. And I think that she would be alive today.
That's so heartbreaking.
It is. I mean,
Any sort of warning, you know, and she could be here today with us.
Mm-hmm. And so fortunately with Allison's Law, that's something that I believe... from all of the research that I've done, is only exists within Forsyth County still. Is that
right?
Correct?
Yeah, it's a new thing.
Yeah. It took a really long time to pass too. 10 years, and there were a couple of reasons why. So one of the things that they had to consider was, you know, what type of defender would get this specific bracelet? Would it be all offenders or just more? Like the violent offenders,
right.
Yeah. And then who would monitor it? I mean, because if you think about how much these law enforcement officers already have on their plates, you know, would it be local law enforcement that was over it, or would they contract out like an independent agency?
Right, like a task force special.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
And then that was another thing too, like who would pay for it?
Right, because that stuff's not cheap.
No, and I mean, you can look just at all of the domestic violence offenses just within Forsyth County, and I mean, it's pretty extensive, so yeah. That's going to be a lot of equipment that's going to have to be purchased.
Right.
And then one of the questions was also what type of device would be used. Would it be like a active 24-hour, like, I'm watching you kind of thing? Or would it just be more of, like, a passive tracking to where it only uploaded information, like, once a day? And to me, that option doesn't really make any sense.
No, dude, I would so want the one they're watching them every single minute of every single day.
Yeah. So would it monitor the victim's location as well? And I think that was, like, a really big thing for them.
That's a good question
to
have.
Mm-hmm.
Is how do you let the victim know when something does happen? You know, is it on their phone?
Yeah.
Or something like that?
Yeah. That's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then they wanted to know if there were any, like, pre-existing programs like this that they could follow or just get advice or learn from, because, you know, we weren't used to how to get something like this going. And so they were trying to look for different, you know, avenues that they could possibly pull from to get this and make it a successful program. And then apparently it was a legal issue too.
I can see how that would come into play. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in doing some research, I found this lawyer, and his argument was, that it could violate the Fourth Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so in 2015, that was actually like a rule. The U.S. Supreme Court actually ruled that GPS trackers were a form of search and seizure and could violate the Fourth Amendment. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure exactly how they got around it, but obviously they did because the law passed.
Yeah, thank goodness. So
it actually passed on May of 2019. So, I mean, this case happened in 2009, and this finally passed in May of 2019. And it passed in the House with a vote of 111-4. And
That's a pretty good vote, but I want to know who voted against that. Like, who are those four people that said, nah, we don't need that?
Yeah. I would want to know why they voted against it.
Yeah, their motivation. I would like to know that myself.
Exactly. And so it passed in May of 2019, but it actually took effect in July of 2019.
Well, that's good. It didn't take them long passing to getting it going.
Yep.
So that's really good. 6 years after her death, Allison was honored at a candlelight ceremony that they held in downtown Winston-Salem. 15 purple silhouettes were presented to remember and honor domestic violence victims. They represented altogether 11 women, 2 men, 1 child, and 3 dogs. I think that is nice that they included the dogs as well. That's precious.
I wonder if they were just regular dogs, though, or if they were, like, service dogs.
That's a good question. I thought of that myself. Like, were they just family dogs or were they in service?
I bet they were service dogs or something along that nature, for sure.
Yeah, I think so, too, because that's a pretty big deal. And I'm going to leave you with this quote from Allison's mother. It's a pretty good, impactful statement, I think. She says, "People think you get past it in a year or two. It's been 6 years, and we're still not past it. Our family has been changed forever."
True Crime Mama Podcast is a production of Coastal Mama Productions. Theme music created by the talented Sam Morrison with Arkham Files Podcast. TCM Podcast is property of the True Crime Mamas LLC. Support your True Crime Mamas by following us on Instagram and Facebook. Check out our website, truecrimemamaspodcast.com, for some killer merch.